Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our results presentation. Just as a reminder, you're at the Eagle Eye results presentation. The key thing that we do is we bridge online to offline, which is increasingly important in a connected world. We do that via promotions, via loyalty, apps, subscriptions, and gift services. And the reason why we're doing it is because what we are enabling is what has always been the Holy Grail, but traditionally has been hard to do, which is one-to-one marketing. The market, I think, is accelerating. The pandemic, as has been frequently written up, has accelerated people's move towards e-commerce, the adoption of digital channels. So increasingly, the pressure on businesses is to be good in that space. And as I've said, to be good in that space means being one-to-one in that space and having the ability to personalize every interaction, and that's where we come in. The world is always on. There's no such thing now. The consumer is always on because they always have their phone. So there is no such thing really as an online-offline world. It's just simply a connected world. And what we enable is you to benefit from that connection as a business in real time. Just as a reminder, you basically need three things in order to make this digital work in this digital world. The first is you need data management, so you need to understand who your customers are and what they're doing. You then need a way of working out what you think the next best message or the next best offer is to send to them. Increasingly, with AI tools, you're able to do that more in a more and more granular and more personalized way. You then need a transactional capability to get that individual message to the consumer, and that is what Eagle Eye does. At the moment, people's data analytics capability outstrips their transactional capability, so they can personalize. But then actually, when they want to get it through to the consumer, they have to resegment. Usually their point of sale system in the stores, where the cash registers, simply cannot support personalization. They can only support segmentation. And then, of course, the third element that you need is a user experience. So if you're one of these big clients, you've got a big data analytics business on the one hand, you've got Eagle Eye as your transactional capability, bringing all your systems together, and then you've got your marketing and your marketing agencies creating the user experience. One of the things that they talk about in selling this sort of service is you need to work out what pain points you're addressing and to explain to people what pain points you address for them. So in order for us to improve our selling capability to major clients, we did some research with the major clients that we've won to understand the pain points that we addressed for them. Now, the first one, as we always talk about, is this ability to personalize. But in their terms, what they're talking about is going from an ability today, pre-Eagle Eye, to do something around 500 million different personalized transactions or segmented transactions a year, moving to 10 billion. Now, 10 billion sounds a hell of a lot, and it is a hell of a lot, and it's best in class, and I'm not sure that anybody else can do it. The second thing that we enable is that most systems at the moment are points-based. So, if you want to do something with your consumers, you do points. You put Eagle Eye in, and it's unlimited, and particularly the big difference that we make is we can do money. So you can make your rewards, do this and earn more points, or you can do this and you earn a discount, and that discount is automatically adjusted at the checkout. The next issue is the problem of identity management, that it's very difficult to group the fact that I've got a key fob, I've got a loyalty card, I've registered a credit card, I'm an e-commerce shopper, I've got an app, I follow you on Facebook, I follow you on Instagram, and actually working out that those seven different things, and I could have kept going, obviously, those seven different things are actually the same consumer. And the risk is that you end up with more than one record for that consumer, particularly between e-commerce and the stores. And so it's very difficult to work out what they're doing. With the advent of the Eagle Eye wallet, those five IDs very clearly get grouped in the wallet and become one customer. The next thing that happens is that not only are the benefits that you are able to offer the segments points-based, but actually you tend to do them batch processed post the fact. And the more personalization that these businesses do, the longer that lag gets. So, you know, sometimes it gets out to 3 to 5 days. If it gets out to 3 to 5 days, people call the call center and they say, I shopped the other day, I earned 100 points, it hasn't been credited to my account. That is a car crash in terms of consumer experience, but also incredibly expensive to handle from a call center point of view. Now, the benefit of Eagle Eye, it's real time. So literally, as you walk away with your till receipt and your app, it's all up to date the moment it happens. There's then some sort of internal things that just make life easier for the business. So at the moment, there's a lot of systems that make these promotional schemes operate. In one example, there's 14 systems in all involved, five of which were associated with offer management. We took that down to 1 hour. So they save the complexity, the license fee, and everything else of five systems. They put in one new system, which holds everything together. That makes life significantly simpler and cheaper. And then finally, as you go to more and more personalization, you're using more and more brands to do that, and you're raising more and more revenue, you need an administration system that holds all that together. Currently, that admin system is pretty clunky. Eagle Eye offers you an automated one. So using the mantra that we actually talk about of how we run our business in a way that is better, simpler, cheaper, you can see that now, helped by this insight from our clients, what we're doing is selling them a better system that's simpler to operate and cheaper to run. It's been a strong period. And particularly for new wins, been our best period for new wins in our history. Now, we have been impacted by COVID. So unfortunately, those new wins haven't quite been the icing on the cake they would have normally been, but they've kept the business growing and growing strongly. We've continued to expand the capabilities of our platform. We'll talk more about the new business pipeline. It's been strong and is getting stronger. And trading remains in line. I think I'm now handing over to Lucy to take you through the numbers.
These are the key KPIs, and I think we continue to develop SaaS-based KPIs that really demonstrate that we're becoming a really good SaaS business. Just quickly whizzing through some of these, and then I'll come back and talk in detail in the slides that follow. So revenue growth, of 8% to 10.8 million. We continue to have a high level of recurring revenue at 73%. We've made huge strides forward in our adjusted EBITDA, going from 1.3 million in half 120 to 2.1 for this first half. We have achieved, again, a very low level of churn, so 0.2% of value of churn, similar level to half 120. The cash position is in a good place. We were at net cash of 0.1 at the end of December. Half one 20 ended in a net debt position of 2.2 million. And we did our maiden operating first half profit of 0.2 million. And for half one 20, we were at a loss of 0.5. So hopefully you'll agree that they're sort of pretty strong KPIs for the first half of the year. I wanted just to remind you and show you and highlight some of the things around the business model. The business model hasn't changed. We bill for implementation fees as sort of what we classify as one-off, which is time and materials for people. And then our recurring revenue is made up of license fees, transaction fees, and we split out SMS fees because they've got a slightly different margin profile. And I think we take a step back. The business has been growing half on half, year on year, and you can see that on the graph on the right-hand side. In terms of the revenue mix in the period, you see a slight tick up in terms of implementation fees. I think it's worth noting, and Tim alluded to sort of some significant wins in the period, which we did. So we won Woolworths in November, and we announced our second US client. There is very little revenue for those significant clients in half one. So a couple of months of Woolworths and nothing of the US clients. So that revenue is to come in half two. In terms of license fees and transaction fees, we clearly have been COVID impacted, and I'll talk you through sort of a bit more detail on that in the next slide. And sort of there's overs and unders going on in those two lines. It's worth highlighting the SMS fees, which have grown by quite a lot. So they represent 11% of the revenue in this first half, where we've seen it traditionally be more around 5%. The reason for that is sort of twofold. For those of you that remembered, we implemented a quick solution for F&B outlets to be able to use our system as a identity management catchment tool when COVID first hit, and they were using SMS as the mechanic to do that. So that has now been replaced by the government scheme, and we knew that that was going to be the case, but it did generate us some revenue at the beginning of the pandemic. And secondly, which is the majority of this growth that we've seen, one of our customers particularly uses SMS as a channel to communicate to its customers when they buy something online. So as a result of the growth in e-commerce, what we've seen is that line grow as a result. So when the goods are bought, you get a text to say, you know, your order's been placed. When your goods are about to leave the warehouse, you get a text saying, expect your delivery on this date. So that growth in e-com is driving the SMS fees growth. This is a little bit more colour to sort of match sort of what's going on in volumes compared to what's going on the revenue front. So we have seen a bit of a dip in volumes during the period. So 5% drop compared to half one 20, but still huge volumes, just under half a billion of transactions. And the graph on the right hand side is sort of showing you sort of what's going on. So loyalty continues to grow, driven by both the annualization of Sainsbury's, but also SEG is live and now generating volumes through the platform, which is just going to ramp up, and it wasn't a big bang approach. So more to come on that in future periods. In terms of promotions has been the area we've been most impacted due to COVID. So first of all, the F&B business has reduced quite dramatically, which represents about 10% of the business. Secondly, the brand activity that goes through our F&B network has been switched off entirely as a result of the network being closed. And then the other area, which is worth highlighting, for one of our supermarkets, we bridge the coupon issuance between in-store and online. So it creates an omni-channel coupon. So if you get a coupon when you buy something online, you can use that coupon in store. And I think as what we've seen in terms of shopping habits has been sort of twofold. One, consumers aren't coming into store as much. You know, maybe a consumer used to go in every night for their supper. Now we're seeing consumers maybe coming in once a week instead. And secondly, what we are seeing is people are choosing their channel and sticking with it. So people are definitely shifted to shopping online, but I think people are making a channel choice. So that particular service I talked about isn't being as used as frequently as we've seen pre-COVID. And then last but not least, you know, gift continues to be a pretty small proportion of transactions and revenue. It's about 5% of revenue, but we did see it tick up in those volumes during Black Friday, where people were clearly in lockdown, so doing a significant amount of shopping online, but also that drive for promotional activity as well was very important. So just a little bit of more detail on the H1 21 income statement. I've talked about the growth overall compared to H1 20, but when we look back compared to that growth of revenue versus the last half, H2 20, we still had half on half growth of 5%. And you can sort of extrapolate that out to look at compared to what the market's got in terms of the growth. And therefore, you feel that the trajectory is definitely achievable. Gross profit and gross margin. Gross profit has grown. Gross margin is at 91%, down slightly as a result of SMS. So I touched on before that growth in SMS does carry a significantly lower gross profit because cost of sales is predominantly driven by the cost of the carrying cost for those SMS. So change in mix at the top is impacting the gross profit margin for the period. In terms of net operating expenses, like everybody, there's been a lot of focus on managing their cost base, and we're no exception to that. Net staff cost remains the significant amount of our cost base. Over 60% of costs fall in this category, and we've held those costs compared to H1 20. So same number of people, 140. And we're managing that and have actually been able to optimize the use of our people in the pandemic because of our operational working and doing that very efficiently. We have had a little bit of benefit still from the move to Google Cloud, which I spoke to a lot of you about in the last set of results. The last year, we had a couple of months where we were parallel running in the last geography. So we do have a little bit of benefit from that coming in from this period, about 0.1 decrease in infrastructure costs. And then the obvious ones in terms of office spend, where we've got offices that have got flexible working space, we've been able to pull back on during this period, and travel clearly has been switched off. And last year, we think we spent about $500,000 on travel. So that discretionary administrative cost and a couple of people on furlough as well has allowed us to reduce those costs by about 28%. But importantly, we still continue to invest in the product. We invested about 2.2 million in the half, in line with what we did in H1 20. So we're not compromising on investing in those important areas during the period too. I've talked about the EBITDA profit, and I think it's worth sort of moving then down to the sort of the profit before tax line, where we've made this first half operating profit of 200,000. And I expect we continue to sort of follow that trend going into the second half as well. So overall, feel that the first half is in a pretty good place. Just a little bit of a moment on cash. We burnt 1.4 million of cash in the first half. But when I saw you last at the end of the full year, we said that we'd benefited from deferring about £2 million worth of COVID deferrals, which included like PAYE, VAT, suppliers, et cetera, et cetera. And from that 1.4 million, 1.1 of that relates to those COVID repayments. So still a little bit more to come in the second half and maybe a little bit beyond because we've deferred the VAT in terms of the latest government scheme as well. But we will, again, in the second half, repay a chunk of that as well. So if you strip that out, we basically burnt about 0.5 million of normalized cash outflow compared to 0.9 in H1 20. If we just sort of break down that 1.4, what's it made up of? It's 0.2 of operating cash inflow split by the breakdown there of 2.1 EBITDA, working capital outflow of 1.6. And then we've got an overseas corporation tax payment of 0.3 going through. So those things netting off to 0.2. And then CapEx represents 1.4 million, the majority of which is our capitalized development costs, which is 1.1 of that. So we're left with headroom for a second half of 5.1 million, 0.1 of net cash, and then Barclays facility of 5 million. And we're comfortable that we've got sort of sufficient headroom to prosecute our existing plan. Just highlighting that we have the facility with Barclays in place till September 21. I'm currently looking at what that means and the different options for us. Clearly, Barclays are keen to sort of renew the facility with us, but we've also got a lot of interest from other banks as well. So we continue to make progress on that, and I'm pretty confident about what that brings in the future around better terms, etc. I am going to hand back to Tim for the strategic update.
Thank you very much, Lucy. So just to remind you, our core strategy is to win new customers, get them transacting on the platform, and as a result of the success that they then enjoy with digital marketing, to deepen their products with the services that we offer. And we've talked to you in the past about how £1 of win in year one from a client is £3 in year three and £4 in year four. Part of the way that we do that is we develop new products, and we normally talk to you about new things that we've got coming to the market in the year. And then, of course, particularly that we take that to new geographies. And then finally, and I've already mentioned it today, that we run our business in a way that we try and run it that's better, simpler, and cheaper. So just stepping through that, this has been our best period for win in the company's history. We have won new enterprise wins, Woolworths particular, who are the market leader in Australia. And I'll come back and talk a little bit more about them in a while. Pret a Manger, where they have launched this very popular subscription program, which is being run on our system. We announced last week that we've been working for a while with Virgin Red. There's several interesting features about the Virgin Red opportunity. One is it's an airline. It's our first move into the airline vertical, where they have a lot of loyalty programs. The second is that it's an affiliate network. So there's a lot of different businesses where you can earn the points, all coming together to one account, to one individual. And then the final element is actually that there's a burn network as well. So you can fly to New York and then exchange your reward for Greg's sausage rolls if you fancy it. These are all examples that I've talked to you in the past of the Eagle Eye technology stitching all of that together and making that operable. So I think that's interesting. And then great to have signed that lovely brand Liberty up, and good collaboration Salesforce, where we're working with their e-commerce operation and Oracle Tills. Transaction volumes have been impacted. They're sort of flattish, but and I think the situation there is they've been impacted by COVID on the one hand, but and the new clients are in the run-up stage, not at the transaction stage. So it's absolutely nothing to worry about. Completely explicable, and our transactions will be growing again once we emerge from COVID. And then in terms of deepening, we continue to have a staggeringly low level of churn, 0.2%, good contract renewals during the year, and doing some nice new work for the Loblaw program in the period. I've talked a bit about the Virgin thing already, but you can see it here. So at the center you have Eagle Eye, which sets all the opportunities for the both the earning and the burning, as I've shown you there. So different places to earn, different places to spend. This is a great showcase of the breadth of the Eagle Eye technology and our ability to stitch different things together. And also, as I said, the fact that it takes us into airlines, which is an interesting space. Our position in North America is moving forward nicely. So we won a new client in the office and home products space, big American retailer, over 1,000 stores. And we are just ramping that up to go to a pilot before the end of our financial year. Southeastern Grocers keeps progressing. Coupon at Till is now live. plus that, plus the clip to card. So that's going well. It is live, but it's a phased implementation approach. So there's a lot more transactions to come from the Southeastern Grocer account over the next 6 months to a year. And as I mentioned, Loblaw's done some interesting stuff around health and also around subscriptions, both of which we are helping them to deliver. And they're two very sort of relevant of the moment topics. We were absolutely delighted to win Woolworths. Woolworths are the market leader in Australia. They are a digital leader. In fact, we work with a business called Woolies X, which is the digital arm of the Woolworths Group. And the reason that they created Woolies X was because they wanted to be able to move at a faster pace to address the market opportunity that digital offered. And they felt that the core business just wasn't going to be able to move that fast. They are, for me, absolutely the market leader in Australia. So we join the market leader in Australia to the market leader in Canada, to Sainsbury's in the UK. And these are all leading digital businesses. We continue to support the Warehouse Group, which is the big non-food retailer in New Zealand. And I think this gives us a strong base for expansion within Australia and New Zealand, but also particularly moving out into Asia. In terms of innovation, so I've mentioned that Message at Till is now live. Not only does that come out printed on a till receipt, as you may have experienced sometimes if you've shopped at, say, a Marks and Spencer's or a Waitrose, but it also now clips to card and becomes present on your app at the same time. One of the big things that we've done for Southeastern Grocers is Point of Sale Connect, which is just upweighting and upskilling our ability to analyze baskets and the speed at which we can analyze baskets and our ability to apply discounts against more complicated rules and more complicated promotional sets. This is the guts, the engine room of digital promotion. We've made a big step forward to achieve everything that Southeastern Grocers want to do here. And this technology will be applied with other new clients that we have won in the period. And we're still continuing to benefit from being hosted on Google Cloud. Because of the lockdown and not being able to go to the office and everything else, we had to focus even more closely, I think, on our people in the year. We wanted to try and get through COVID without missing a beat. Our people are the crucial thing in what we do. As we went into lockdown, we did a stress survey to understand how our people were feeling and how we could support them through the disrupted and lockdown working. We discovered that although our teams felt that they were working very hard and that they were under pressure to deliver, that they weren't under unreasonable pressure, that they understood what they were doing and why they were doing it, and that they had support from their teams and their managers to deliver. As ever, when you research these things, what you discover is the biggest cause of stress to any employee is the behavior of their boss. And so what we set up was some extra management training to try and improve the quality and capability of our managers and how they look after their people. I think in the old world, we'd have probably got that senior management team together for some sort of residential offsite. What we've done because of lockdown and everything else is we actually have a weekly seminar, which the whole of the executive committee and the whole of the senior management team attend, where we discuss different books. There's a book called The Chimp Paradox, which is about how you manage yourself in order to make sure that you don't allow your own frailties to impact the life of people that are working for you. A book called The Loyalty Effect, to how you create value for customers, how you engage staff. We've done a big piece of work on agile and how to deploy agile across the whole business. As I say, we get together on a weekly basis. We also started measuring employee promoter score during this period. And 54% of people would recommend Eagle Eye's products and services, and 60% would recommend it as a place to work. For those of you not familiar with Net Promoter Score, it's a 10-point scale, and you only count the top two boxes, and you subtract from the top two boxes any scores in the bottom six boxes, the other two being neutral. So it's a very, very aggressive score, and actually it's quite common. You can have negative, you can quite easily have negative Net Promoter Scores, and certainly to get to the levels of 60 as a Net Promoter Score is very high. We're very pleased with it, and we're working very hard to keep it going because we believe that ultimately it's our people that make the difference and enable us to deliver for our customers and for shareholders. In terms of outlook, our trading remains in line with board expectations. We have been impacted by COVID, there is no doubt. If our underlying trade was not COVID impacted and we were able to layer the wins that we're enjoying on top of it, we would be enjoying record trading. Our pipeline is strong, particularly in the US, but starting to materialize in Asia. Our funding position, as Lucy has explained, for the current strategy is solid. And I think that, as I tend to say every time I see you, the market is coming towards us. And I think COVID has accelerated businesses' need to adopt and implement things digital. So the board remains confident that there is a significant opportunity for us going forward as the world comes out of lockdown. Thank you very much indeed for your attention. We'd be delighted to take any questions you may have.
We have a question from Kevin Ashton from N+1.
Good morning. Yeah, I'd like to ask you a little bit about the product, acceptance stroke momentum. I mean, Tim, you already mentioned something that we see all the time, which is, I think you described it, staggeringly low churn. So acceptance is kind of answered in a way. But it's this win rate that is interesting that you talk about, that you say it's the best ever win rate you've had. And we've seen a lot of the names that you've talked about, big enterprise names coming in. You've just talked us through a few of them. I guess from our point of view, we're always looking for trends or inflection points. And sometimes it's kind of hard to see the wood for the trees on that, I suppose. But it does feel like you've somehow crossed a Rubicon to some extent. And you also talk about a very strong pipeline. And if you're winning more deals, you're going in. I mean, I guess the slide you showed at the beginning shows where you are adding the value. But I'm just kind of thinking, as you know, how does it look from your side? Does it feel like I'm sure it's an evolution rather than a sudden change in terms of your offering. But it does feel like, as you say, a higher win rate is a big deal.
I mean, it is a very big deal, Kevin. I think it's a shade irritating that I think the history of Eagle Eye to date would have been, you know, some amazing wins with the likes of the Loblaws and the Sainsbury's but that underlying ability to turn £1 of win in year one into £4 by year four has actually been the driver of the historical performance of the business.
Yeah.
The first bloody year that we get the wins going, stone me if we don't have a pandemic, and actually the underlying's a bit, you know, is a bit softened by the pandemic. But there's nothing, so I would say that, you know, that the reason that we're able to grow the business is a lot of it is to do with what we've won and the annualization of what we've won.
Mm-hmm.
It's fair to say that a lot of what we've won is not transacting yet. So yep. There's a lot to come from those wins. But I think we're confident. We are confident that the underlying will return, that brands will want to be doing more digital marketing, that food and beverage industry will want to be winning customers when we come out of lockdown and get their industry back going again. So I think that the layers will come back into place as we move into the fourth quarter of this year and then into the start of next year.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
And we'll go to Ross Broadfoot from Investec.
Two questions, if I may. The first, as you get more boots on the ground in the regions where you've recently won bigger clients, how will that change the setup of your teams from a sort of sales perspective? Lucy, I know you're heavily involved in Loblaws, but are there sort of regional heads of sales that are now empowered at that kind of level? So that's question one. The second, the method obviously so far has been invest as you win. But obviously you're flagging, COVID having driven better structure at your clients in terms of omnichannel. And as more and more enterprise level clients join the platform and you continue to build that roster of clients, is there a potential to shift to investing slightly ahead of new client wins? And is there anything on the platform that you would love to have that you think would really help get you into clients X, Y, and Z that is currently you're waiting to sort of invest more in?
So international management, we've actually, we now run the business with regional vice presidents. So we have Jonathan Reeve down in Australia and Asia. We have Al Henderson, who is also our CSO, but is the regional vice president for UK and EMEA. And we have, at the moment, we're covering the US and North America by with Anthony Stevenson, who actually is head of sales rather than the regional vice president. So I think the short answer, Ross, is absolutely yes. And the reason that we've done that and the structural emphasis of that is that these regional VPs articulate the needs and wants of the clients on their geography. Eagle Eye is successful by being a very customer-focused business, by creating a lot of value for the people that we serve, as I think that pain points slide illustrates in the deck. And so what we want to make sure is that even if you're the other side of the world, we are getting very clear feedback about what clients need, what clients expect, where we're overperforming, where we're underperforming, etc. So yes, is the short answer to that. In terms of I wouldn't say we, no, the short answer is we are not limited to do something that we want to do by shortage of funds. We are okay with the pay-as-we-go model. And of course, the better we do, the more funds we generate to get a little bit ahead of ourselves. So I think we're okay. But you have my absolute assurance that if I do think we are slowing ourselves down, then clearly we'll come to shareholders and explain the benefit that we can deliver by accelerating. But at the moment, we this is a very profitable business. You've seen us start to turn, to full PBT profitability. But it's we are managing the profitability that we make so that we can drive the growth. We're not just letting letting the full profitability that the business could achieve rip through the organization, because we've got lots of growth to deliver for as far ahead as we can see. So we have our own ability to fuel our growth, I think.
And the question, Tim, specifically around investing in the platform or the product, I think the answer for that is also no, in terms of, is there anything, a huge gap in our product portfolio? I think the last 12 months we've been investing in the message at till capability, which I think is very important for the US market. So if we didn't have that, maybe we'd be saying now, yeah, that would be a gap with our strategy of growing in the US. But I think, as we've said to you before, we invest into the product very much linked into what our customers are telling us rather than speculative investment. And I think we feel that actually that strategy is sort of keeping us, again, on the curve rather than behind it on that strategy. Would you agree?
I would. And I think we've talked to you before about the development of the affiliate network, and actually we didn't tell you it was Virgin. Yeah, so we, you know, I think Lucy's right. I think it's the way, you know, we've got amazing clients who have a view about how they want to do personalization and how they want to do their marketing. And because of the geographic spread, we can help them develop that and then deploy it elsewhere. So quite a lot of the work that we will do, we're doing at the moment and is going live at the moment in North America is needed for work that we will be doing in the near future in APAC.
And we'll go to Robin Speakman from Shorecap.
Good morning, Tim and Lucy. Just following on from Ross's question, just on costs within the business. Cost management over the last year throughout the pandemic has been a very positive surprise to all of us, I think, and clearly very welcome. Just looking at costs moving forward, do I sort of take it from your answer to Ross's question that from this point, really, you know, cost inflation in the business is going to be concentrated around the future sales effort? Clearly, the platform is pretty well developed. Implementations, you've talked in the past about them being on a shortening timescale. So what I'm getting at here is the ability for cost leverage focusing on sales.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of thoughts.
Yeah, the immediate requirement in the business at the moment is around the delivery of the new wins. So I think we've spoken to you before. We have a team that sort of comes in initially with the expertise, and then we fill in behind it. We're at the stage now for our international new wins in terms of Woolworths and the North American win that we're currently recruiting for the local teams to support that. So the initial team can drop back and then will be deployed on the next new opportunity that comes in. So we're currently recruiting for 6 heads specifically for that requirement. In terms of further investment, I think we continue to be flexible and we will continue. I think, as you point out, Robin, I think we had, before the pandemic, we were beginning to get a bit of a reputation of not investing too far ahead of where we needed to be. And I think we will continue to do that. We've got a clear line of sight in terms of what we want to be doing in terms of our movement of our margin, and there's a skill to that in terms of not releasing it too quickly because we're still sort of pretty new in new geographies. But I think definitely sales is an area we would want to invest into the future, especially if we start seeing that America has really got the potential that we believe it has. And I think probably the product is the other area that we will continue to invest in because it's important as we grow on the top line, but it won't grow at the same rate as the top line itself.
Okay, understood. Just moving to the actual nature of the client base, I mean, what we've seen as you identified there, Tim, about, you know, the kind of success of online, I was just wondering how you saw potential role for Eagle Eye in servicing the growing number of online-only potential retailers. And third question is just about the significant data flow that you are generating. And, you know, clearly the platform is now pretty embedded across sectors, you must be generating some really interesting data. And I just wondered about, you know, whether there are any plans to sort of monetize that, whether it's possible to monetize that, or whether you see the data capability as you're sort of strengthening your own proposition with the client base.
Our sweet spot is omnichannel. Our sweet spot is online to offline,
okay,
which is about 80% of economic activity. So, at the moment, we don't, and where we're particularly helpful is where an online, an omnichannel business has an online offering which struggles to speak to its stores, its shops, and we can reconnect them back together so that they can have a better single customer view. So our strength is not pure plays, I would say, at the moment. In terms of data, the three-layer cake, the three-part bit that we show you at the beginning, at the moment, we have no, we are not a data business, we're a transaction business. We tend to hold very little data, and we hold it for as little time as possible, and we pass it back to the client. So we keep our GDPR compliance levels light, and we just do our transaction, do what needs to be done, and then hand it back to the client. That doesn't have to be forever. If we decided that that was the best way to grow Eagle Eye, then we could change that. We could equally easily plug into Eagle Eye Data Analytics Inc. as we plug into Dunnhumby. But at the moment, as yet, we haven't chosen to do it. So I think both things that you allude to are ways in which Eagle Eye could grow in the future going forward. The thing that we will have to do, as the management team on behalf of the shareholders, is to pick the ones that we think will give us the best bang for buck.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you.
At the moment, frankly, the best thing that we can do is to get more and more enterprise businesses on the platform that we've got. You know, we haven't even started yet in terms of just the US itself, as you know, Robin, is such a massive opportunity for this. And one of the great things about our entry in the US is the incumbents are not very popular. So that the people that have got, have current contracts for services that we offer are always looking, is there a way I can change this? Is there a way I can replace it? And we're a different sort of business. I just talked earlier on about the way we create value for businesses. That is different. That is attractive. And I think it will do well in the US.
And very quickly, we'll go to Katie Cousins from ShoreCap.
Morning. Just a quick question from me. ESG is in the forefront of a lot of investors' minds right now. I just wanted to ask, what is Eagle Eye doing to address this, or how do the company values positively contribute towards ESG qualities?
That's a good question, Katie. we've set up a sort of an executive committee to look at it. I think there's sort of three areas that we're sort of addressing and looking at the moment. One is around people and diversity and equality. And Tim started to talk about, you know, the real focus around people, and it sort of extends beyond that. For example, we've started an ERG program as well, run by a group of employees set up by them, And each month we talk about a different important topic, whatever that is. This month we talked about International Women's Group, Women's Day. The month before we talked about Chinese New Year, for example. We talk about Black Lives Matter. So there's always been a topic where we're trying to drive really the topics from what's important to our people. So we're doing a big piece of work around people. Clearly around being carbon neutral and the environment, et cetera, et cetera. That's been run by our COO. We are sort of fortunate, clearly, that our solution is about trying to eliminate paper. But also our big suppliers really are after people, which obviously doesn't have that sort of impact, is around Google and Rackspace and our big technology suppliers. So we're fortunate that they've got their own initiatives as well. So that helps in terms of flow through to our business. And then I think there is the sort of general compliance side as well, which sort of I'm sort of running and looking at in tandem with sort of the frameworks that are out in the market. So it's something that we'll be able to report on more fully at the full years, but it's sort of underway and we're looking at it pretty seriously.
Brilliant, sounds great. Thank you.
Dan Ridsdale from Edison.
Yeah, it was just, I'm trying to get a picture of the sort of latent revenue value within your current customer base. You talk about it going from £1 to £4 in 4 years. I mean, of the sort of 10.8 million revenue of the period, are you able to give a picture on how much of that is coming from, I guess, the people who are still on early on that journey? And then you talked about customers who are not yet generating revenues, and obviously you've got the effect of COVID, I guess, complicating that. Are there any metrics you can give to steer us in that regard?
The overall point is that the better we do at winning, the more we have coming in at the one level, with the opportunity to develop 2, 3, 4 in the years going forward. So that's great for the outlook. I think the second thing is that I don't see any reason why most clients won't return to the sorts of behaviors that they had prior to lockdown. So I think that will also contribute. Lucy, I don't know if you want to add anything else.
No, I was just going to say this year is a bit of a funny year, clearly, because of the pandemic impacting the growth of existing clients that maybe are on year 2 or 3 of their journey. So we're probably going to get a bit of a flattening. So I think we haven't done the specific analysis because we do it on an annual basis. But the important thing for us is actually we've got quite a few wins coming in the pipe this year that is going to really drive that growth and that shape going forward, so which is important and at a higher rate than we've seen before.
And that's the end of questions. Tim, have you got any closing remarks?
Thank you very much for joining us. I think as we say, I think the outlook is for the rest of the year is sort of as we've indicated. And I think the moving into next year, I think there really is quite an opportunity for these wins and the strength of the pipeline to start layering up in the way that we've sort of indicated that the business will perform. So I'm pretty bullish, to be honest, about what the next year will hold.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.